Welcome to Recurring Nightmares, episode 36. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
Hey.
And as promised, we have two creepy doll movies this month, but with a twist. And Chris, I'm guessing you figured out what that twist is. They don't have any powers.
Yeah, they're...
they're not alive.
No.
Which I thought was a cool idea. I had seen Magic when I was a kid. I didn't get it. Pin I've heard of, and I wanted to see it. So that's how this episode came together. We will get to them in a little bit. But first off, Chris, what have you been watching this last month?
I've been watching some new films, I guess. Went and saw Creed 3.
Yeah. I did as well.
The 900th Rocky movie.
Yeah.
Third Creed film, this time directed by Michael B. Jordan.
First time director.
Yeah, and I think he did a pretty good job with this. No Rocky in this at all, which I think is fine. I know some people were not fans of the fact that Stallone had no...
I having rewatched Creed 1 and 2 going into it, I was not a fan of the idea of no Stallone, because I think like those first two movies, in my opinion, are kind of about the relationship between them two. So it's like, how do you make this work without Stallone? What'd you think of it, though?
I thought they made it work very well. I mean, they made this about, you know, Adonis. It's about him. It's about him struggling with, you know, how he deals with the world, how he deals with, you know, being an older boxer. Like the film starts with him basically retiring.
Yeah.
And then much like with Rocky, like being pulled back into it, a very personal story, you know, between Adonis and, Damian, played by Jonathan Majors. You know, the reason for that fight is very personal to the two of them. And they go into that. I think there's maybe a bit too many flashbacks.
Yeah.
To it, but it's fine.
I feel like you had to, kind of, because...
You have to give the context for why they keep, like, kind of redo... So it's like, the first time you see it, like, Adonis sneaks out with Dame and... And like Dame's an up and coming boxer, and then they end up after the fight, they end up at this liquor store where he's, you know, Adonis is going in to buy, you know, whatever, and something happens. They cut away from it, so you kind of know where this is going. And then each time the flashback happens, you're getting more of the story, and it's like, and you could have just kind of shown everything at first, but I guess like they're looking for like emotional impact on you getting the reveal as it's going, as Adonis is like thinking through his life and his choices.
You could kind of like guess kind of what happened, but like,
yeah,
it is like this huge backstory, like an important backstory for Adonis that has like been invented for this third film. Like, you knew nothing about this, you know, none of this is mentioned in Creed 1 or 2. So it's like, yeah, well, this whole brand new story.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, you don't know anything about Dame, but you do know about... I do remember them, like, talking about how his mom, you know, kind of saved him, right? Like, came and got him. I think isn't it shown in the first one? Like, she comes out of the group home.
Yeah, they go into, he was in group homes. I think, like, she's not his, like, mom.
No,
like, his biological mom.
She,
like,
is, she's Apollo's wife, but Adonis is the son from another, an affair, basically.
Yeah, yeah, and you know what is funny? Like, rewatching Creed, I'm like, I think I was really stupid the first time I watched the movie and, like, did not catch that, like... And that made the emotional story in the first one much stronger once I realized that rewatching it. Because it's all about him, like, he says it at the end of the movie, like, you know, I had to prove I'm not a mistake. And So he did have some shit he was dealing with. I was always like, why am I supposed to feel bad for this guy? But
right, like the son of a famous boxer.
Yeah, he's like rich. And, okay, he wants the box, but good for him. But anyways,
I liked it.
Yeah, I enjoyed Creed 3 for sure. I think a lot of what I loved about it was Jonathan Majors as like this, you know, his old friend who, you know, he feels like he got left behind by him and screwed over. And basically he feels like Creed is living the life he was supposed to live. And he's been in, you know, prison for the last 20 years or whatever.
Yeah.
His performance is really great. Like really good villain / rival, whatever you want to call it. It's kind of messed up because I don't know, like, maybe it's good acting or maybe this dude is crazy in real life, because I get out of the movie, I'm praising his performance up and down Twitter and shit, and then I see he's trending.
He's just been arrested for domestic assault of some kind.
It sounded pretty bad too, so who knows, you know, it's what's going on with it, but pretty fucked up if you know that is what happened. And
yeah, you know, I mean, like the charges against him, strangulation, like a bunch of stuff, not great on him.
Fastest career ascent and descent,
I mean, history, maybe. Been in two huge movies that released in the last like 3 months.
And he's got a big Oscar bait film coming out this Christmas, and just his star was rising. He's been talked about as one of the most exciting new actors out there. And seeing Creed 3, I kind of agree, but I'm starting to wonder, like, I don't know if we're gonna see this guy much more.
Yeah, like Disney hitched their wagon to him. He's basically supposed to be the big bad for their Marvel stuff for the next few years. So it's crazy.
Yeah, but overall, I enjoyed Creed 3. I did not like it as much as the first two, and I think, again, they pulled it off again, and it's good. It's entertaining. I think the series is out of gas, man. Like, because where are you gonna go now? Like,
I think it needs to rest. Like at the end of this, he's done, right? Like, he's proved it everything.
Seems that way, yeah.
And similarly, like, you know, they did that. You know, by the end of Rocky IV, he's done everything.
Of course, there's been a million since.
Yeah, so and there were a bunch that came after. So they set it up so, you know, maybe 15 years or so, they can come back and, you know, with his daughter. And
that's like set that there. Up. I don't know. Like,
I don't know if I'm interested in that.
Yeah, I mean, either.
And like when you go, oh, they're making a new Rocky movie. It's going to be about, you know, Creed's kid. Like, all right. I mean, I'll go see it. I go see every Rocky movie.
We did this. You pulled off the miracle once. It is like Creed 1 is one of the best legacy sequels that there's ever been.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
And you had two good sequels. And I say, let it rest. I don't think they will let it rest, but
there's money to be made here, right? So,
oh yeah, this movie made money. So, they're gonna run it into the ground probably. But I enjoyed it so far.
I do like that. You know, they have spaced these out to some degree.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah,
like they're not like right on top of each other. So, hey, you know, if they do another one, maybe it's not for quite some time. That would be nice, right? Like, give it 10 years or so, and then hey, here's whatever. I don't know. I don't remember what the girl's name was, but
Rocky gets back in the ring.
I did not rewatch one in Creed and Creed 2 before this, but I thought they ended Rocky's story fairly well in Creed 2.
They're like the core of both of those movies. In one, that's the whole thing, and it's like they have to fight for each other. Like, you know, he's helping him. Rocky's helping Creed train and come up, and Creed is helping him battle cancer. And the second one is all about how, like, Rocky doesn't want him to fight this guy. He's scared about it. And then, of course, Rocky comes back. Like, there's, like, it plays like a relationship movie, but yeah. with you know, two guys in a boxing movie. But I he was missed for me in this one. And it really felt odd how, like he's mentioned, like, once, but it's not like, hey, where's Rocky? It's just like a passing thing, like about how, like, oh, that's how Rocky got his start, you know?
Yeah, yeah, because that's kind weird of, to me. That's kind of how they set that's how they set Damian up with his fight.
Yeah, they talked, I think, Chavez into fighting him by saying that or whatever. Yeah, but
yeah, because And you find this out later, but like Dame sets up, but he basically performs a hit. Yeah, it's so telegraphed. But
I thought I was really clever that I knew it. Like when they did reveal it, I turned to listen like I knew it. but yeah, I don't know. It was good. It was good.
One thing that this happened in, you know, in Creed 2 as well, but the Rocky films have always been like Philly centric, and Creed 1 very much, you know, takes place in Philly. Creed 2 gets away from that, and Creed 3 is very much LA focused, and like I did miss that about it. Like it's nice, you know, Philly's not a city that gets a ton of films in it, and it's but nice seeing it on screen.
From this series, it gets a ton of love, and yeah, it's another thing that was missing.
It's like it just didn't. It's the one thing that I think I was like, I missed that from, and I missed it in Creed 2 as well. Like,
yeah,
the Philly feel of it is just not there. But
I get it. He's not from there. He's from LA. But yeah,
it makes sense why they did it. It's just it
was another thing that made Creed 1 special.
Yeah,
he goes to Philly. What else you seen?
I went and saw Scream 6.
Yeah, and you were one of the people that enjoyed it, right?
I did enjoy it. I thought it was very fun. Great callbacks to the rest of the series. They started playing around with this with Scream 5, which was the whole legacy sequel type thing. And then this is like, then they start playing like now where it's like this whole big franchise, like we've tied everything together and there's all franchise rules. And so they play around with new rules in it. It's still very film focused. So I enjoyed, you know, the cast that's here. You know, they killed off Dewey in the last one. And what's her name doesn't make an appearance.
Another Rocky situation where they don't say a word about it.
They do. They mention her. I can't remember what the fuck was her name. I don't know why I can't. She was in Scream 5 too, and I'm unfortunately drawing a blank on what the fuck. I know I need to see Neve Campbell, Sydney. The main character from the original Scream. They bring back Courtney Cox. She mentions that, like, Sydney's not coming to New York. She's not getting involved this time. It's kind of how they just write her out of it. But I thought everybody else was fun in it. And it has another crazy, wild twist at the end. Reminiscent of Scream 2.
I know what happens. Yeah.
Yes. It's like there's, it's goofy. It's like, yeah. All right. Whatever. I'm on board. The only thing I'm not like super big with is Sam, who is like the older sister in this. She is supposed to be the daughter of the original killer.
Oh God! They brought that shit back with the ghost.
Dad. So like she sees him in.
Why is he a source of inspiration? He's the killer. Dude, I don't.
Yeah. Like, but she like sees like visions of him, and he shows so up and talks to her, and it's like, I'm not a fan of that, but everything else with it, like I enjoyed, like I thought the kills are quite good. You know, there are multiple Ghostface here. Like there's a reason for that, that they do reveal, but the Ghostface here is like especially brutal, more brutal than I think probably I've ever been. So
that's what I heard. It's real vicious.
Yeah, like it's mean in parts. And you think it's like, oh man, like that looks, and there's like twist on some of that stuff as well. I don't know how this one kid keeps living. Like I think he was brutalized in 5. he is again brutalized in 6, but he lives. They just keep bringing him back. I had a good time with it. I'm not sure where a lot of other people fell on it, but I came out of that theater going, yeah, that was a good, fun horror film.
It's so mixed. It's like there's people that love it and hate it. You know, there's a lot of people like you that liked it, but I saw equally a lot of shit reviews. And, you know, I think I've been up front with this with you. Like, I am so over this franchise. I think it's corny. It's so weird because at one point, the first Scream was my favorite movie ever made back when it came out. I'm just so sick of this franchise. I will end up seeing this because I've seen them all, and also because, you know, I want to see the cool kills, but boy, my love for this series is long, long gone. So I'll let you know, again, it's going to be, once it's like a $6 rental, I'll probably give it a go. But
yeah, it did very well, so I don't know when exactly it's going to hit, but yeah, I'm sure it'll be out for rental at some point. It may show up on like Peacock or one of them as well. I think it's a Universal film, so may just show up there.
What else?
A couple other things. Real quick, I saw a film called Pathaan. It's an Indian spy thriller. I saw a review popped up in my feed that was like, oh, if you can't wait for Mission Impossible, what is it, 7? Is that the one coming out now? Like whatever the new Mission Impossible film was, they were like, if you can't wait for that, we've got the film for you. And I was like, they were like, it's an Indian Mission Impossible. And I watched it, and it is not an Indian Mission Impossible. It is more, I think I refer to it as a mix of 90s Bond movies and like the Fast and Furious films. Like, it's goofy, a little bit too goofy at points, but like the action is very solid, especially for a film that's filmed on like a $28 million budget or something like that. It looks particularly good. Some of the CG is not great, like the explosions and stuff. But in general, it's fun. The main character, Pathaan, he's played by this guy, Shah Rukh Khan. Evidently that guy is like almost 60 years old. He does not look 60 years old in this movie. So maybe that's where the comparison to Mission Impossible came from. And, the female lead, Deepika Padukone, she's been in some stuff before, like American films. She's phenomenally beautiful.
Like I've heard of this movie. I think someone recommended it to us because we loved RRR so much.
Yeah, and that's why I was like, oh, I don't know. Cause like I did not love RRR. I only made it like through 40 minutes of that. And
did you get to the big train part?
I don't think I even got there. Like,
I thought that was like a half hour in. Like, it's pretty quick. You gotta... So has this inspired you to go back, or are you admitting
I don't know, defeat? Like I think I might just like, I don't really care. Like, this was fun, but I'm like, I don't need to like deep dive in on.
Well, that's the thing.
Indian action films.
It's like, I really enjoyed it. I'm not saying I will never watch another one, but I wasn't like, after I saw RRR, I needed to like go see it, like really like figure out the genre. Like I've seen probably one of the best ones, so cool.
Yeah, and I mean like that this evidently very, very popular. It's the fifth largest Indian film worldwide ever. RRR is like number 3. So like, yeah, it's of that quality.
Yeah.
I guess if you're like looking for something like that, like this has it. Like I don't understand the whole like dance number in the middle of the film. Like there's one,
I love it.
I just did it. Like I was like, what is going on? Like, cause like you have like these montages and you know, even in like a Mission Impossible or something or a Fast and Furious movie, you'll have like a montage, like where there's some music in the background and stuff's going on. But like, this is just like, it's a music video, like just dropped into a film,
like a music, like a little bit of a musical. Like they do that in RRR too, and I was delighted when it happened because I was just like,
I don't, just get on with it. This movie's already so long. Like, and then like the ending, I like whatever. The ending was a big musical number where the main characters are dancing and singing, and you know whatever. The credits are rolling. That I don't really care. This is like in the middle of, he's like scouting out this. He's trying to like track down this woman, and she's singing, and like there's costume changes. What the fuck is going on?
It's weird because like I just, you know, I kind of enjoy like musical numbers and stuff, and RRR, I was not put off by that at all because RRR switches gears a lot. Like it'll be the spy thriller 1 minute, and then for a little while it's like this like a romantic comedy. Like it's just like it's just like here's everything. So when they got to the dance number, I was like, yes, we're gonna dance number two.
Yeah, it's like, to me, like this feels like more of a traditional like action movie. Like wouldn't, if you take out that dance number, that dance and music number, like, you know,
pretty straightforward otherwise.
And you make the dude the Rock. Like this is, it's that type of movie. Like it's just this dance number in the middle is like just a little weird. There's other weird things in it too. It's a bit goofy for my taste in action, but high quality, looks good. Everybody looks phenomenal. And I mean the women in this film are super beautiful.
Well, kind of sold me on it. I had already heard of it, so do not be surprised if I check this one out at some point.
It's on Prime, so it's out there. And then real quick, I saw John Wick Chapter 4 today.
Mm-hmm.
The end of the John Wick saga, maybe. There's talk now that there might be a Chapter 5 at some point. This film made bank over the weekend, so
yeah.
It's a John Wick movie. The action very well choreographed. And like 3, they've kind of moved away from just the headshots.
Yeah,
which, you know, John Wick 1 was very much like, oh, I'm just gonna shoot people in the head, and that's fun for a shorter film, but you know, as these films and the action scenes get longer and more complicated, you don't just want to see people like firing and missing. And there's a lot of hand to hand combat. There's, you know, there's a car chase at one point. It's fun. It is a fun film. I think it's a little over long.
Yeah, that's why I've not seen it yet.
It is nearly 3 hours long, and I felt it. Like, I was checking my phone, like, what time is it? Like, where are we at? We got to be nearing the end. It's a bit goofy. Like, I mean, I guess John Wick's always kind of been like, you know, how much pain can you put a dude through? And, like, he still pulls out, like, and is able to persevere and win. But like this, it's fucking absurd. Like, he gets hit by a car, then he gets like hit by another car. And why is Paris filled with like a million grunts that are just coming out? Like, it's a never ending sea of people that keep attacking him in the final stretch here. It's a bit goofy in that regard, but yeah, if you like well choreographed action, it has it. I just think the length of it hurts it a little bit, because by the end, like, man, I don't care about this duel. Like, you've just expended all of my energy with these huge action scenes that have taken, you know, 2 hours plus.
Yeah, I cannot wait to see this movie at home. So that's,
yeah, I bet that's
because of the length. Yeah, I don't mind a long movie. I actually love sometimes when a movie is long, but like the theater experience of that is not like,
it's hard.
It feels forever. Like I really start to feel it. Like even a 2-hour movie in the theater these days, I'm just like, all right, come on. Like how much time do we think we have left now?
Right.
Like, I start like gaming it out in my head. We got it probably about at least 1/2 hour left.
Like, you're stuck in your seat. Like, right? Like if you're in your house, you can get up and move a little bit. Like if I get up and move, like I'm interrupting somebody else's viewing experience.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't want to do that. So like, I'm just gonna like, I guess I'll just fidget here in my seat. This continues on and on and on. Yeah, it'll probably be fun to watch. You'll probably in like maybe a month or two.
It's gonna be a straight buy for me as soon as it hits digital. I actually think this series is stupid. I don't love this series. Like I think a lot of the story elements and the world building shit, I really think is dumb. Like I don't like it. But however, that said, by part 3, the action had gotten so fucking amazing that it didn't even matter. I just like I was like, I have to deal with this shit to get to the cool shit. And I've heard that this one is like, just in terms of the action, some of the coolest action you're ever gonna see. So I'm excited for that.
There's some really cool action scenes. I do think it's ridiculous that like, and I don't know if he does this in the other films, but like he runs around with like his arm up, like, and he has like the cuff of his jacket kind of over his head because his suit is bulletproof.
That might have been something. I don't know. I rewatched the first one like last week, and that was not a thing in that one. But
no, there
was...
like, and he's just a regular. Like, I mean, he's a hitman in it, but he is like getting back into the game because they kill his dog.
Very simple, straightforward story, and I appreciate that in the first one. But like, even that first one, it's not over. It's not like they get way deeper into the fucking bullshit in 2 and 3. But like, even in the first one, any of the world building things they did, I just did not like. Like the Continental, this hotel, and like these chips or whatever the fuck, these gold coins.
The markers and the
all that stuff. Why can't you just? I know some people like it, and I get it. I get what they're trying to do, but it's like, I just want a normal, straightforward action movie that feels like it takes place in like reality, but. Like, I don't need it to be realistic, but you know what I'm you get what I'm saying? Like, this feels very cartoony.
Yeah, you want a simplistic idea for, like, what, you know, why am I getting revenge? Like, why are people hunting me? Instead, it's this whole, like, interconnected, everybody's a fucking hitman in the world. And, yeah, like, this one's very simple story, right? Like, I need to fight this dude. I need to challenge this guy to a duel based on the rules of my organization. So that I can, like, everybody else stop hunting me, and they just add so much bullshit on top of it. It's just like, do we really need all that? Like, why do we need 3 hours to basically have, like, I need to fight this dude so that people will stop trying to kill me?
Well, I'm sure I will enjoy the action when it is available at home.
All right. Well, that is it for me. What have you been, you've been watching?
Not that much. I saw Creed 3, which we talked about, and I saw Knock at the Cabin, Shyamalan's film, which I think you talked about last month. I know you really liked it.
I did.
I liked it. It was good. Just didn't leave me a lot to think about, I guess, after. And kind of, like, as time's gone on, I'm like, I don't know. It was okay, but that was not when I blind bought because it was Shyamalan, and I'm like, I don't know if I'm gonna watch that again, not anytime soon. It wasn't like top tier Shyamalan for me. Like, just because I think you could get, like, without spoiling it, I don't want to spoil it for people, but like what I'm saying and why, there's just not a lot there to it.
Very 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 straightforward.
It's what is promised in the trailer.
Yeah, if you've seen the trailer, that's what it is.
A little more. But, as always, he really good at directing and shot composition and all that. And he's good at suspense. And I like Dave Bautista in it. And, you know, the very polite, these very polite home invaders who are trying to convince them that they have to kill one of their own. But yeah, like I just, even like there's little touches at the end. I think I texted you one that I would have liked where, like, if they, you know, realize some of the destruction that they caused. They didn't, I mean, maybe it was kind of in the silence, but anyways, I'm getting too close to spoilery, but yeah, it's good, but like again, not like my favorite. And I saw actually earlier tonight, I saw the Gerard Butler movie Plane, which I know you also saw and enjoyed. Yep. Talk about straightforward fucking action movie with none of that like John Wick bullshit on top of it. And it doesn't have like the groundbreaking, like it doesn't have like its own spin on the action genre. This is just like an old school.
No, if you,
this is what, this is your dad's action movie, yeah, right?
If,
here, you
if
know?
You took a, you know, if you, you took Gerard Butler out and put Chuck Norris in or Jean-Claude Van Damme in, this film still works. Like it's that type of action movie.
And furthermore, and again, like, again, my favorite type of action these days is kind of like the Indonesian films that are like really intense, like crazy, like even more choreographed than John Wick, you know, The Raid, stuff like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I appreciate this type of movie, and this one I fucking loved. This was so much fucking fun. I kind of wish I just bought it instead of renting it. One, I really enjoy Gerard Butler. I've always, ever since Den of Thieves, I've loved him. He's great in this. The premise is just fucking awesome. And you know me, I'm afraid of planes, and so, like...
Why I told you not to watch this before you went on your vacation.
There's a lot of, you know... I almost wish to, like... There's a lot of plane shit in it, and the plane shit is very cool. I almost wish I had seen this movie without having seen the trailer and knowing where it was going. Because, like, if that was the case, I would have thought, like, the whole movie is about... Because it's called Plane. I would have thought, crash, it's just, yeah, like, that's what the movie is. And then, like, then it just turns into, like, an action thriller from there. But then we get back to the plane stuff. I loved the ending. The ending was so fucking cool. So I really loved Plane. My movie of the year so far, honestly. And just for fun, I did speak to an actual pilot, like what his thoughts were on some of the stuff in this movie. And like, yeah, anytime you see your own profession on the movie, they get a lot wrong. So
he was
picking apart, like he'd be like, the outside of the plane is one type of plane. The inside of the plane is another type of plane. The way the rows of the seats are aren't right. Like, they, like he's like, they, you know, the, you know, lightning is kind of what brings this plane down. He's like, lightning does not do that. It would just disperse around the outside of the plane. Like it,
right. Like it's basically it fries their all of their electronics in this. They have to and put it's down.
Like, it's just like if lightning hit your car, it wouldn't do anything. It would just, you know, just spread the electricity around the outside of the car, and that would be it. He just picked it apart from that angle, and I was interesting. Like, I did ask for his take, and he gave me like all these detailed fucking notes. But that's it didn't matter to me because it felt
it feels real.
It felt real, yeah. Like I felt like they like. The way they have to land the plane and shit like that. Like, it felt, again, because I'm a layman, I don't know, but it felt real. I also loved, like, in the background through the whole movie, there's, like, the situation room situation where, like, the airline is trying to find them.
Yeah.
And I found that part, like, I was not expecting that, and I found that to also feel real to me and was interesting. Like, that. So, yeah, this was, like...
I don't know if that, like, I'm sure that they have some sort of, like, situation room.
They do, they do.
They manage PR and stuff like that. But, like, that type of room does happen for security situations and, you know, with multiple companies. Like, they have where they pull up a map and they, you know, they have people on screen and you're talking to people, trying to put people on the ground. Like, that stuff does happen, so.
Yeah, and he said the room would be, like, much bigger with way more fucking, like, monitors and all sorts of crazy shit. But I guess that is a thing. But I thought that was, like, it just, like, it was something like the movie. I guess they did have to include it because they send mercenaries out there.
Yeah.
But I just didn't expect it. Like, I thought it was a neat, like, they kept cutting back to it. And I thought it was cool logistically how they're trying to figure out what's going on and get, like, I don't know. I just, all around, really entertaining. If you like, you know, old school action movies, this is like a no-brainer.
There's word that they're going to do a sequel with his partner.
Another
stupid name, like Car or something like that.
The thing about it is, I get it, but like, you should just do ship, and Gerard Butler is the captain of a ship. Like, don't even explain it. Like, just he is the captain of a ship. Like, that's where
I like that idea. Thing.
Yeah, but yeah, instead they're going with this the other guy. Oh God, I can't say it. But the other character, the prisoner, I love his ending.
Oh yeah, it's very, very well done.
Just I don't know if you remember, he finds a bag and he peace out. That was so awesome.
Yeah, he's like providing cover fire.
Yeah, oh my god, dude. Everything about the ending is so cool.
He finds the bag, the mercenary's bag of money to like buy the prison, buy the hostages back, and he's like, this is mine now. Nope's out.
Yep. Loved it. Loved that really movie.
Smart and funny. Good, solid, you know, 90s, early 90s, late 80s style action film.
But I do wish that the sequel was just Gerard Butler is a ship captain and don't explain it at all. Like, it's just like a multiverse thing. Like, you know, in another life, he was maybe.
Yeah, you keep doing, you just keep doing this where he's like, he's a it's bus just something driver else. Now.
Yeah. That's the way to do it, I, in my opinion, because you need Gerard Butler. But anyways, that's what I've seen this last month. I was going to mention Succession, which is back, but I remembered that I already kind of like shared my thoughts on it. And the thing I was going to say is the same thing, but very strong opening to the final season. And just interesting info. The creator of the show, Jesse Armstrong, was writing this fourth season, and as he was writing it, decided this is it. This is like the ending. Like, that was not the plan, and he had to go to HBO and be like, just so you know, this is gonna, like...
We're done
now. Yeah, I've decided that, like, I've reached the logical conclusion here, and we could go out in style and go out really big. And I'm just like, it makes me so excited. It's still so fucking funny, but then also, you know, the drama is really strong, too. Really excited to see how that plays out, since he just decided, this is the end. But that's it. I guess let's get into our movies here, Chris.
All right.
Again, I chose two creepy doll movies, but the spin on it is they are, you know, most creepy doll movies, especially since Child's Play came out, are killer dolls. The dolls come to life, and, you know, they're like the slasher. These two, the dolls have no actual power of their own. They don't come alive, but the people who own them are a little twisted. And I actually want to start with Pin from 1988.
Pin is the one and only friend Leon's ever had. The only one who doesn't care that Leon's different.
God, it must be crazy to be here tonight. I defended you. Boy, was I dumb.
You never had secrets from each other.
Only Pin knows Leon's darkest secret.
Leon?
Hello, Marshall.
Oh, my God.
When someone hurts Leon, Pin hurts them. someone tries to come between them, Pin won't let them.
I don't think Aunt Dorothy will be staying with us for very long.
What do you mean?
Might take her a little while to feel the vibrations, but I think she will.
If you want to get closer to Leon, you'll have to take care of Pin before Pin takes care of you. Is Pin a friend?
Oh, oh please.
Or an enemy? Only Leon knows.
What have you done? What have you done?
What am I gonna do?
Pin, some friendships die hard.
So this was a like straight to video psychological thriller that came out in the '80s. I think it's Canadian, and in yes. Canada it got a theatrical run, but here in the States it was picked up by New World Pictures and went straight to video. Kind of went to obscurity, you know. And I still say basically is an obscure movie. We had to watch it on YouTube.
Yes.
Some random person uploaded it. But, you know, it has built a minor cult following over the years. This was written and directed by Sander Stern. I forgot what he would go on to do. Based on Pin, a novel from 1981 by Andrew Niederman. And starring, you know, I'd say the big star here was Terry O'Quinn, but I think everyone involved here kind of went on to have careers and careers in television and whatnot. The premise of this movie, Chris, a little weird.
Yeah.
The movie in general, bizarre.
A little weird.
All right, so Terry O'Quinn is who's from The Stepfather. He's like the dad in this movie as well. And he's a doctor who has like this anatomy dummy like in his office. He's like a family doctor, and he's got one of those things where it's like, you know, the doll's skin is transparent and you can see like the muscles and stuff underneath.
Creepy looking muscles.
And this dad is fucked up. And he fucks up his fucking family, especially his son. So that's what we get, like, in the early portions of the movie. It's like, you're seeing these kids, like, grow up. And I think at first it's not really clear what the deal is with this doll, because he'll bring his kids into the office, and all three of them are talking to the doll as if it's a real, like, living thing.
Well, because the doll responds.
Yes. And at first, I did not realize that it's just the dad doing ventriloquism. Like, he's just, like...
Right.
There was a shot I noticed where, like, oh, yeah, he's like, moving his mouth a little bit. I guess it should have been obvious from the beginning, but I wasn't sure where this movie was going at all at first.
Yeah, because I did not know the premise going in. So yeah. Like, you said creepy doll movie. I'm thinking like, oh, you know, this is some weird science fiction thing. He's created some sort of android that looks like this.
It becomes clear. Like I figured it out pretty early. Yeah, but it's a little. It throws you off a little bit at first because it's just not really explained at all. And even though it is the dad, like Terry O'Quinn is like making the voice, the doll is voiced by an actor. He's voiced by Jonathan Banks, who is people will know as Mike from Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. Does not sound like Jonathan Banks at all. If, like, you did not know that, you would not guess it was him.
No, like, but it also doesn't sound like it doesn't sound like Terry O'Quinn or like you know, David Hewlett who plays the son.
So the idea here, though, is because he, like, because the dad treats this doll as real and it talks and this and that, one of the two kids, there's like a brother and a sister, the brother like believes like that thing is real, and like even as he gets older and would theoretically know better, he's just so permanently fucked up by his dad doing this to him. There's other things that happen too along the way as he's growing up that are weird. I forgot what it is. He goes in to talk to, like, also, yeah, his dad has a rule where they cannot talk to Pin on their own. Like he has to be there, but the kid, the boy, I forgot the boy's name now.
Leon.
He goes in there to talk to him on his own for advice or something, and he witnesses a nurse come in. Like, he, you know, hears someone coming.
Yeah, he's in the room trying to talk to Pin, and then here's this nurse who's coming to close up.
She fucks the doll.
Yes.
She takes him out, like, she basically uses the doll to masturbate, but, like, she, like, lays down on the table, puts the doll on top of herself, and I guess, you know, it has the parts.
It's anatomically correct.
And she, like, makes it, like, you know, basically missionary style, fuck her, and that's when I was like, okay, this is going to be one of those weird straight-to-video oddities. And it is. Like, the movie is very weird. But I guess I'll say, like, some of what I thought of it, though, because, yeah, it's weird and that stuff is funny because it's so out there. But, like, I think the movie actually kind of surprised me, too, because, like, I genuinely think it's, like, pretty good for straight-to-video and kind of, like, punches above its weight a little bit. I guess, you know, feel free to chime in with, you know, we don't have to give like final thoughts cause we're still going through it, but
yeah.
What's your like just initial reaction to this movie? And I guess this scene
was fucking wild. Like what the fuck? Like, and immediately afterwards, Leon and his sister are kind of like, they're talking about sex and like, edge, you know, They call it the urge. And like Leon clearly has like a very conservative view of it, where Ursula is more like, yeah, I want
to get laid. I'm excited to have sex.
Yeah. So yeah, like they, you see there's the diverging paths there. And that whole thing though, super weird scene where like nurses that are working for, you know, this dude, or they clearly think that they can just like utilize the medical doll as a fuck toy.
It's so out there, but you know, it's there. It is there for a reason because it's partially to explain why he's so fucked up when it comes to sex and stuff. Anyway, fast forward to high school. Now we have different actors playing them. You know, it says modern day 1988. I don't know if it says modern day, but you could tell it's modern day just based on like music at the dance and stuff like that. Leon finds his sister fucking in a car and he freaks out about it. Like, again, like you said, he's like way more conservative about it, but like,
he beats the shit out of the guy,
and he's like grilling her on the way home, like giving her a fucking 10th degree, like, how many guys have you been fucking? I don't want a sister who is a tramp. If you ever do it again, I'm not your brother, he says.
Yeah.
You know, clearly, at least he did not grow up into a well-adjusted young adult. She's a little better off than him. You know, she knows that Pin is not real, and she seems to just want to do normal kid shit.
Yeah, Leon is, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if it was the dad and the ventriloquism, but he is certainly mentally ill in some way. He has some mental issues.
Yeah, I think it's the dad and the ventriloquism is just something that like fucked him up and like rewired his brain at a young age. Then seeing the nurse have sex with the doll fucked him up sexually. And kind of like the theme running through this movie is like it's like an incest theme. Like, he kind of wants to fuck his sister. Like, he's very protective over her sister, doesn't want her, you know, that kind of becomes the central thing as it goes on. But there's one more thing that I think really fucks them up, is that she gets pregnant,
and yeah.
they don't know what to do. They said they should talk to Pin and see what he says. And I guess Pin says, you know, you should tell the doctor, because he's a very scientific man who won't let morals into his decision making. And, you know, she made him, basically Pin is saying, like, their dad will approve of the abortion.
Yeah, and this is where Ursula, like, because she knows that Pin can't talk. Like, she understands.
Yeah,
that,
yeah.
That, you know, her dad has been, through all these years.
So who was speaking at this point, though?
It's him. It's Leon. Like, he is.
Leon is doing Pin. Okay. Yes, it's not like dad is in the room. Like,
no, no. Leon is the key, and he has a split personality now where, you know, he talks very similar to what happens in the next film we're going to talk about, where, you know, Pin becomes part of Leon's personality. And he has these internal monologues, but they're not internal, they're external.
Yeah.
And he voices the other voice in his head as Pin.
Yeah, okay. I mean, that definitely, as it goes along, that obviously makes sense. But, all right, so this is my last, like, theory on what fucked him up, too, because they go to the dad, and he's like, yeah, we're going to do this abortion. I think he's like, don't tell mom or whatever, fuck, we're just going to do this. Like, he's pretty cool about it. But then he's like, Leon, where are you going or whatever? He's like, wait. He's like, he makes Leon observe
to watch
the abortion. Like, so I'm sorry. I have enough evidence now to say the dad fucked him up big time.
Certainly didn't help.
Yeah. So, and now, you know, we get into like the second act of the dad. The parents get into a car accident and die. It is a weird scene because Pin is in the back seat, and it kind of like makes it seem like Pin is doing something, but like it's just him moving around.
Yeah, driving. I mean, the whole reason Pin's in the back seat is because
the dad discovers him talking.
Yeah,
to Pin, yeah. And he's realized how much he's fucked up his boy. He's gonna go donate it to a university.
Yeah, I gotta get rid of this doll because like
I can go throw it away, throw it in the dumpster. I don't know.
And it doesn't make much sense. I know they're running late, like the doctor and his wife running late to get to this talk.
Yeah, you just
but like the doctor is increasingly getting more and more erratic. He's driving as he's like, you're not being chased by anybody. Like, Leon's not chasing you. Like, he's not coming after the doll. You're acting crazy for no reason, and ultimately they end up in a car accident and die.
And Leon finds the doll at the accident. It's like number one priority is get the doll home.
Pin, all right.
it's weird. And so now it's like the brother and sister living alone, but I think their aunt comes to live with them.
Yeah, not for very long.
Well, that's the thing. Like, all right, so he seems pretty pleased about their situation when they get home. Like, there's like all this stuff about how like now we can eat pizza and garbage and do whatever we want. He seems happy about the situation. Like
that stuff that we didn't touch on is that the mom was also abusive and crazy.
And she put plastic on the couches and they were like so thrilled to do that. Like, Leon feels liberated with his parents gone.
And like anytime Leon would do anything that like a little kid would do, like maybe track dirt into the house, like his mom was abusive and like smacked him and it's like, you're not allowed to hang out with other kids, and like so he was like basically a freak. You know, his dad is talking to fucking medical dolls, his mom is beating him up because he has dirt on him, all sorts of issues.
But their aunt comes to move in and like it, you know, she's like imposing on his newfound freedom, right? And you think that this is going to be what the rest of the movie is, right? Like, I really did think, like, all right, the aunt moves in,
literally he 5 minutes.
And like right away, I think he scares her with the doll so badly that she has a heart attack and dies.
Yeah, he moves her pills, that sneaks into her room. He must have already been there when she went to bed. Locks the door. And then starts talking to her as Pin, who's in the bed with her.
And so after that, I'm like, now what the fuck is the rest of this movie going to be? And I guess the rest of the movie is kind of, I mean, his spiraling worse with the pin shit and his, like, you know, overly protective of it, like his obsession basically with his sister and any, like, her wanting to date any guys being a threat. Like, that's kind of what the rest of the movie is, right? Like, he dresses Pin up in a suit. He adds, like, skin and hair to the thing and brings him to the dinner table. There's a shot of, like, Pin sitting at the dinner table that's pretty creepy. Again, like, I don't know, like, and this isn't, like, a strong, like, horror movie. It's more of, like, a weird psychological thriller.
Yes.
But there's stuff, like, the shot of Pin sitting at the dinner table with the skin and the hair stuff, pretty creepy looking, dude. Like, I don't know, this movie, like, always kind of impresses me for what it is, which is, like, this forgotten VHS.
Sure, I could see that.
I'm trying to think of, like, some of the stuff that happened. Like, there is some violence. There is, like, a kill or two.
Well, the one that I and it's not even a kill, because maybe he does end up killing her. I think she might get away. So he invites this girl over to have sex. Somebody that he went to high school with, and, you know, she's kind of a skank, and he invites her over. He, like, gets cold feet at the last minute, and then he leaves the room and then starts chasing her around the house with Pin in
basically, yeah, like a wheelchair.
It's so ridiculous.
It seems like he'd be pretty easy to run away from, but she's just, like, running all over the house. Like, dude, just walk out the door. It's fucking,
well, yeah. Well, I think it's scary. Yeah, the door locked, and for some reason, inside had it needed a key. I don't know. Like, it was very weird. Like, yeah, I would have found a way the fuck out of there. Like, it's a doll chasing you. Although she doesn't know that, right? She doesn't know what this is.
Like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
So he's real hard on this guy that she starts dating, his sister starts dating. But then he's like, oh, you know what? I he, like, realizes he's gone too far for once, and he says, invite him to dinner. And though, you know, first thing he wants to do is introduce this guy to Pin. And the guy, this poor guy, man, plays along with it pretty well. But the most horrifying thing, like, if that's not horrifying enough, is after dinner he reads them some of his poetry that he's written.
Yeah. And it's very incestuous. And
it's a poem. Like, I wrote the exact line he said when he's introducing the poem. He's like, in these lines, he's contemplating rape for his first time. The lack of self-awareness. Could you imagine? And it's a poem about raping his sister. You know, Stan, the boyfriend, gets her aside, and he's like, he needs psychiatric help.
He's, like, not stable.
And Ursula kind of gives her, like, we finally hear, like, Ursula's, like, in her thoughts when she tells him. She's like, well, there's no cure for what he has, and he's not hurting anyone, and she loves him, you know, like, he's all that she has left. And yeah. So, actually, I don't know if, like, because I know he does attack Stan, he invites him over later.
Yeah, he goes, like, hey, sorry, I acted really weird, and but, you know, my sister's birthday is coming up. Let's have a party. Can you come over here right now? Like, help me plan this. So he goes over there. It's like, yeah, we'll do that.
He like makes him drink, and he drugs his drink. And one note I took here, because this is something I did notice, like, or I think I thought about when I was watching it here. It's like, how do people in movies always have, like, some drug that you can magically put in someone's drink to, like, I wouldn't know where to begin, and I fucking know drugs. Like, what drug is this? Like,
I mean, to be fair,
I do roofie people, but again, I wouldn't know in a million years where to fucking get that. Like,
yeah, I mean, his dad was a doctor, And good so point. Maybe oh, there's shit in the house, and like he does say that, you know, he's read stuff and he's very learned, even though he doesn't go to school anymore. So it's, you know, who knows what he, maybe he just crushes a whole bunch of sleeping pills and puts them in there. I don't really know.
Yeah, but I guess
he doesn't do it right because it doesn't work right away. So
yeah. So they end up fighting, and this is the one, I guess. This would be the one kill in the movie, at least you think it is. Because he, you know, it seems that he kills him in this fight. He puts his body in the plastic furniture covers, which is a touch I really liked. And then he hides him in this wood pile in their yard. But when his sister gets home, she figures out that something has happened. She's, you know, this is a spot. She, like, knows. You know, and he's been more and more unhinged. She knows that her brother is, like, actually dangerous now.
Yeah, well, because, I mean, so, you know, the big thing for her was, like, she gives her boyfriend, Stan, a watch as a present, and every hour that watch beeps. So she comes home, her brother gives her some bullshit answer, like, oh, yeah, Stan called and said, like, he has to, like, leave town. He has to go help a friend or something.
He's been
gone for a while. Gives, like, a bull. Doesn't make sense. Like, why would he talk? I mean, today you'd be like, why would he? But he would call the house, right? That makes sense. He would. There is no cell phone. So, like, but she's starting to, like, read through it. And then as time goes on, she hears the, you know, the watch ring. She's like, Stan, where are you? Like, this isn't funny. Like, you're hiding, then that's when she finds the blood spot, and it's like shit starts to go south from there.
I think it would be a really lame, like, climax, because anyway, so she like runs out to the wood pile and gets the axe, right?
Yes.
And she runs in, she fucking about to swing it at her brother, and then it cuts away. I'm like, you're gonna cut away from, like, the one big kill, it's, like, her it's killing good, her brother.
It's a good reason.
It's good. It's great reason. Because I even wrote, like, my note was, sadly, killed off screen as it cuts away, ? Like, why did that happen, you know? And then they find, the police show up and everything, and they find her boyfriend in the woodpile. He's still alive. But then it has, like, this cool twist. I think put the movie over the top for me, because you find out she didn't kill her brother with the axe. She ran in and killed Pin, the doll.
Yes.
And you know this because her brother's still alive. Like, the final scene of the movie is she's going to talk to Pin. It's weird because you see it from behind. Like, the camera's behind Pin's head. He's, like, sitting in his chair looking out the window. I think Pin asks, like, have you seen, or...
He's taken on the complete personality of the doll.
Yeah, it is her brother has completely become Pin. And they both, like, say something, like, about how they miss Leon or whatever. And then you get the front-on shot, which is, like, the surprise for us, the viewer. Like, you know, you see Pin looking out the window, and it is just the dude, her brother, Leon, dressed up as Pin.
He has full time medical care at this point.
I think a really neat ending, honestly.
Yeah, and it ties into the beginning, which we didn't touch on, is like that these kids are like, hey, there's like this weird dude just stands in the window
for sure,
and they sneak up, and like then the doll, which, you know, we don't know what it is at the time. Something speaks, the kid gets all scared, and what it is.
I totally forgot that, yeah.
Leon is the one in the window at the beginning, and so it all ties back to that, like, you know, it took place 15 years before, but...
You know, I didn't even put that together, so you just said it. I thought the kids were Leon as a kid, for some reason, looking up at that. I don't know why I didn't put that together, but obviously, yeah, duh, that's really cool. I kind of like went on what I thought of this. So let me hear your thoughts on Pin. We've pretty much wrapped up.
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately it's a it makes sense why it was direct to video. I don't think it would have done well in, you know, in theatrical release here in the United States. It's interesting. It's very interesting. Very weird, like the way it plays out, the way Leon just his, you know, his, I think they describe it as schizophrenia in the that film.
His sister's diagnosis, yeah.
So like whatever his medical condition is, like, you know, he has slipped into this where his internal monologues that everyone has, everyone like kind of like, you know, you have thoughts in your head and you keep them there. His are all outside, and he has personified it with this doll, and it's super weird and creepy, and you can understand it as a kid, right? Like 8-year-old, 9-year-old, 10-year-old may have an imaginary friend you talk to. You might talk to the weird doll that your dad has, in his medical office, but that doesn't stay. And like his imaginary friend stayed with him and made him into a murderous psychopath. So I enjoyed it. Thought it was a fun watch. I don't know if I'd go back and watch it again, but glad we gave it a go here.
Yeah, it's not going to be like my yearly Halloween list or whatever, but I thought a fucking neat little movie, man. Like, just you expect, you know, straight to video shit to be weird, dumb, and cheap, and like this is definitely weird. Like, it has the weird factor, but it was like more thoughtful, and like I guess that's why I could believe it was based on a novel, because it's kind of literary. Like it's going somewhere, right? Like it has a point, and it has a really cool like twist at the end. Like I really appreciated it, and I love finding a straight to video movie, and we'll be doing one later this year. That is just like surprisingly good, you know what I mean? And that's kind of where I land with Pin.
Yeah, it kind of has a made for TV feel to it, you know, a little bit
yeah.
But like ultimately, like the story is interesting. The portrayals are fascinating. Like it's entertaining enough that like it doesn't it over. I think you said it right. Like it's. It punches above its weight, like
yeah,
it's,
a little bit, yeah.
It feels like a TV movie, but it also feels like it's doing a little bit more.
Than yeah, that. it's like a good TV movie, you know. Yeah. So every once in a while, there's TV movies that are like pretty decent, right? Like yeah. Back at, you know, TV movies back in the day were a big thing. Like us growing up, like remember all the Stephen King ones, and
yeah.
You have like The Burning Bed, and you know shit like that, and. Sometimes they're pretty good, and this is like a pretty good one. And I think that like I really like the performances of everyone in this. Like I thought the brother and the sister did a really good job.
Yep. Yep. Agreed.
So I guess we kind of gave our final thoughts. I guess all that's left is a score there.
I am gonna go with a 6.
I'm gonna go with a 7. Like I said, it kind of impressed me and gave me more than what I expected. So. If anyone's listening and is interested in checking out Pin, right now, the only way to do so, unless you have like you can find a VHS tape of it, I'm assuming, is on YouTube, though. Like, someone has uploaded the movie in full, pretty quality, you know, upload, and it's been on there for like 7 years. And all you have to do is type in like Pin 1988 and you'll see the file. You know, it's a full movie, and I forgot how long it is, like hour 40 minutes, whatever. Yeah,
not long at all.
It's a recommend for me, man. It's especially if you're into like weird shit like this, like these weird like lost, you know, things. Worth checking out.
Also to note, Sandor Stern, he wrote the screenplay for the Amityville Horror.
Yes, that's the other thing, the other big thing that he did in his career. But yeah, so anyways, that's Pin. Up next, we have Magic from 1978.
When your heart begins to pound, when your mind begins to go, keep telling yourself, It's only a movie.
You do magic too?
Corky does magic. I only do tricks.
There's never been a magician like him.
How long you been like this, kid?
You never really told why you were here.
Hiding. Wasn't that cheap in New York?
You won success, but you're afraid of it.
I figured I'd stop by here and ask you folks about you.
Not afraid.
Where were you living? What city? How many kids?
I'm not afraid.
Never expected to find you. I've loved you all my damn life.
I won't be here!
I was afraid of success. Like you said, I needed to get my head on straight.
And now you're fine?
Sure, on account of Peg. I've known her ever since high school. I never figured I'd have a chance with her.
Peg Yance, no, please. Let me follow wherever you go.
It's you and me, take her.
I love Peg.
Just the two of us. Now everything's changed. She believes me.
A man appears after 15 years, says run away with me.
Don't kill her. Oh, please, don't kill her.
No, I can't do it! I won't do it, you can't leave me!
Magic, a terrifying love story. Joseph E. Levine presents Magic, starring Anthony Hopkins, Anne Margaret, Burgess Meredith, Ed Lauter, distributed by 20th Century Fox.
So Magic, in some ways, is like the inverse of Pin, where I said, like, you know, Pin is like a movie, like the straight-to-video movie that, like, punches above its weight, right? I think Magic is a movie that punches below its weight. Like, it has an extremely high pedigree, and what it is just a B movie. Like, it's
very much so.
It's not very deep, in my opinion. It's a little bit like it is also based on a novel, and it has, you know, it is another like psychological thriller type thing. I guess it's weird because to me, watching it back to back with Pin, it like, to me, lacks depth in comparison. I don't know if you would agree with that.
It is very much more focused on the, you know, Corky, the main character, than, you know, where, you know, Leon and Pin are the focus of Pin, but you know, you get a little bit more with the sister, and there's other characters here. Corky is like it.
Yeah, but it this to me is really like crazy guy in a cabin movie, like attacking people. Like, it, like, there's a psychological element to it, but it is very much a genre movie. It's a B movie, like, it doesn't have its aims too high, but it has, boy, does it have like some talent behind it. You know,
and we'll get into it as okay. Yeah, I think the ending does have. Does kind there's of reveal of, stuff too.
There's parts of the end I think are really cool. Yeah. But anyways, this is directed by Richard Attenborough, who would go on to direct Gandhi. Screenplay by legendary screenwriter William Goldman, based on his novel, I guess. But he, you know, he did All the President's Men down to Misery. Like, he's done. He did tons of screenplays, so huge pedigree there. You have fucking music by Jerry Goldsmith, who's done fucking a million things, just all around. And then you have Anthony Hopkins in the lead role. Some cool minor characters played by awesome character actors in this. And in some ways, kind of a similar, you know, setup. It's a crazy guy and his doll, right? And this one is Anthony Hopkins is like this amateur magician. He's like just starting out, like doing like basically open mics and stuff. And I guess, you know, he's supposedly pretty good at his craft, but like nobody seems to care. You know, he's just going to bars and where people are not paying attention. Every time I see a scene like that too, it like always reminds me of the movie Joker now. Like where he tries to go do comedy. Yeah.
Yep.
But you know, it's not that he's bad, it's just, you know, he's in an environment where people are not there to see him, right? And he snaps at the fucking audience at his first solo show. And his trainer, who is like seemingly on his deathbed at the beginning of this, is like, you need to find some sort of charm to get people, like, you gotta charm the people to get them paying attention so then they can watch the trick, right?
Which is something that they talk about, right? Is that, you know, for magic to work, you need to be, you need people to look one way while you're doing the trick over here so that they don't see it.
There's that too, but it's also just, you know, these people are just
they're not paying attention to you, yeah.
So you gotta do something to like grab their attention. He's got this agent, so then we like cut forward to like he has figured out what, you know, what it's gonna be. And he's got this agent played by Burgess Meredith that, you know, our generation would know as Mickey from Rocky, but he was a character actor in a ton of things. He's in a really great episode of Twilight Zone. And he's bringing this other, I think, you know, TV guy to come see him, who's played by David Ogden Stiers, which I don't know if you ever watched MASH.
Mm-hmm.
You a MASH head?
I'm not a MASH head, but I've seen MASH.
He played Charles Winchester on like the you know latter half of MASH.
Okay.
Just like these TV, you know, looking for TV. He's like, his agent's basically trying to get him on TV, and you see what he's come up with, which is basically he added a ventriloquist dummy to his act, and the way that Hopkins introduces him is actually pretty cool. He has the dummy out in the crowd, and he like introduces him, like someone starts heckling his act, and you know Anthony Hopkins says, "You think you do better? Come on, you come up here." And he like runs out into the crowd, and you know then he grabs the dummy and brings it on stage, and I think that is a really clever way of doing it. That would grab people's attention.
Yeah, because it's like everyone loves, not everyone loves the heckler, but everyone likes to watch that train wreck when somebody is heckling from the audience. So, yeah. So like, oh shit, what's happening?
And then he brings, you're looking and he brings the thing up on stage. And the dummy is like his id. It's like this very foul-mouthed, you know, he's going to say all the things that you could not say, which is kind of what people do with ventriloquist dummies, right? Like, they like let out the worst parts of themselves.
Yep.
And the MB, I think, you know, Winchester, David Ogden Stiers is like an NBC guy who is like impressed and wants to, I think they want to give him a pilot, right? Like, let's shoot a pilot with you. Like, you're a talented comedian. And
yeah. Like, I mean, it's, I think like after that, that performance, it picks up like a few months later. Like he's been on Carson,
Tonight
Show, and they're like, "Yeah, like we want to make you a star," which is what, you know, Ben Green, Burgess Meredith's character, has been like. Look, you give me a few months, I'm gonna make you a star.
Yeah,
and he does. And yeah, then Corky
refuses. He refuses the one thing NBC wants him to do. To do this pilot, one of the things is to do like a medical exam, because they don't want to they spell it out in the movie, like they don't want to spend like $500,000 doing this and you're some crazy flake, you know, or whatever, like,
right, or you dropped out of a heart attack, like,
or whatever, yeah, whatever, not, yeah,
not healthy.
But what Corky, you know, Anthony Hopkins is worried about is them discovering that he's like developed some serious mental problem. Also in this whole part, like, you get some cool, I always notice this when this happens in movies, like, you get some cool like footage of 1970s New York, which is just neat to see, like the old cars and the buildings and stuff. But Yeah, he refuses. He says, that's, you know, that's no deal. I'm not doing that. One other thing I want to say before we move on. I mean, it'll come up again, but, like, Burgess Meredith as his agent. I think Burgess Meredith is awesome in this movie. He's so good. Just the way he delivers every line. He feels like this, like, old, wise, the confident guy. He's seen it all in the biz or whatever.
Yeah, he's like an old school...
Yeah, real old school guy, smoking the cigar, drinking his scotch or whatever, you know.
But like also like he knows the ins and outs of the television business of Hollywood. Like he knows how to make you a star.
He sells it so well. Like he plays that role so well, dude. Anyways, our main character, Corky, he takes a cab to where he grew up. During this cab ride, like he makes the cabbie drive past like the house where he grew up and all these like kind of like spots for him. And you get these little glimpses of his memories of him growing up. Like you see him and his dad playing catch out front, like, you know, and it's a memory. And then they'll show the house now. And I think it was like a vacant house. Did you get a memory of a funeral that he went to? I'm assuming one of his parents or something, right?
Yeah.
Then he makes him take him to this lake that's nearby, and he gets out and he tells the cabbie, here's $100 for the drive, and here's another $100 not to tell anybody that I'm here. Obviously, he's trying to hide from his agent, who's probably like, what the fuck, you know?
Right.
And it's like this little, like, you know, resort with a bunch of cabins. He finds, like, the owner who lives there and, you know, makes her give him a cabin, even though she tells him, like, I think she says, we're closed for the season or whatever. I think they're thinking about closing the whole place down.
Yeah, she says later that they're going to close the whole place because they haven't done. But
yeah,
at that point, says, like, we're not open.
We're closed. Yeah, we're not open. And he like offers a lot of money, and she's like, "Oh, we're open for business." And it's actually a pretty funny thing. You find out that this is some girl that he knew growing up. And he thinks that she didn't recognize him. And then you get her perspective like right after that. And she thinks that he didn't recognize her. But they both recognized who they were. They were kids together. And he had a big crush on her. Go ahead.
When she liked him, but like he never, you know, advanced on his crush.
Does she say that? Did she say that, like, oh yeah, if you would have
yeah, something to that effect, if you had reached out, or if you had ever asked, maybe things would have been different.
Well, he definitely reaches out here. Can you imagine showing up at some fucking girl's place that you knew when you were like fucking 15 years old? Jesus Christ, man, this is that, and it's part of the problem I have with this movie. But anyways, yeah, he was like madly in love with her as a kid. And he kind of like, yeah, he tells her like kind of what we just said. She's like, yeah, I know. I knew that you were into me. But she's married. She's in an unhappy marriage. She tells him all this stuff. She's in an unhappy marriage, but the guy's not around right now. He's away on a business trip. Again, to me, this whole thing, I don't know. What do you think? To me, this whole thing is like a stretch, dude. Like, I don't...
That he shows up at his old flames.
And she goes for it. And I mean, this kind of awkward guy who was probably awkward in high school. Maybe she thought he was cute then, but, you know, now he looks like Anthony Hopkins. I don't know. I just don't buy it, dude.
Well, now he's famous, though, right? Now he's been on TV. Like she said, oh, I saw you on. I saw you on Carson. Like so, like he's famous. Like I don't know if I buy that she likes him, but maybe she's good looking,
Right? The one thing, And the one thing I put it several times in my notes is what you just said is that, yeah, he's a minor celebrity. So maybe at this point, she would be, you know, some people would be like,
and
she, that like, aspect would be enough, right? To like,
well, and she's also in, she's in the mountains in New York. Like it's not a great area. So like, hey, like maybe if I hitch my wagon to this guy and he's not a dick, he likes me.
Get out of here. And then, yeah. You know, she's looking at a guy, I guess. All right. You know, maybe it worked better in the book, but to me, I just don't buy it, dude. I just don't. I think it's weird. I think like if you're this girl and this guy showed up, like you would find it weird. Like you'd be like, I haven't seen this guy in fucking, we're kids. And we barely talked then, and now
he shows up at the place where my parents used to run this place. Like it's not even, he didn't know I'd be here. This was my parents' cabins. Like this was their thing.
Or if he did, that's dude. That's just, the whole thing is very like, uh oh, dude. Like, is this guy crazy? And then if that wasn't enough,
yes, for very much. Uh oh, is this guy crazy?
Yeah, if that wasn't enough, he clearly right away shows signs that he's like not well, right?
Yeah,
it's like, a card trick.
The card thing. Well, like she. Like he tells her this story, right? Like, oh, it's, I don't believe in whatever this is, and then he basically does this card trick on her and gets angry at her.
Mm-hmm.
That's weird. Like that would have been like when I'm like,
nah. He loses it, dude. Yeah. Like he's very.
And then 2 minutes later, she's in bed with him.
Yeah, he fucks. Basically, it's a guess your card trick, right? And he fucks it up. And he fucking loses. He goes, oh, because you weren't concentrating enough on your card and this and this and that. And her, instead of like leaving immediately, which is like honestly, the way he's acting, what you should do, like,
acting
slowly towards the door, getting to the door, running away as fast as possible. Like, it's very scary the way he acts. But then instead, she just lets him try the trick again. He's like, just concentrate harder. And he does it, and he gets it, like, he gets it right, and then they just fuck, we get the fuck scene, and I'm like, this is like, I just don't buy that. Also, I mean, spoilers for the thing that we're going to spoil at the end, is like, you find out, like, he purposely did it like that, like, he purposely did the trick like that. Did you catch that part at the end when he says
yeah,
that?
Yeah, yeah.
We'll get to it, but that's like the big... This is a big turning point at the end of the movie, which is actually pretty cool, like when you find that out, but like the way he acts so unhinged here is like very scary in my opinion.
Anyway, yeah, it's the first real crack, right? Like you see him crack in the hotel room before he leaves to go there, but that's just like he's arguing with his, you know, with his agent. Here it's like you seemingly like this person, but you can't keep it together with her, so you're off, man. Something's wrong.
Yeah. Like the alarm has been sounded. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like, holy shit. Anyways, and I thought it was enough. Like, this guy was like the original incel. Like, they have sex one time, and then the next day he's talking about how she should like leave her husband. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, it's that's again, it's another thing that, like, I think if I saw this when I was younger, I would buy into, like, I saw it when I was way too young. I saw it when I was like 11 years old and only into like slasher movies, right? But like, I think if I saw this when I was like 15, 16, I would see it as romantic or this or that, but like, them having sex one time and him being like, you should leave your husband for me, like, that's not how the real world works.
No. And like, she kind of is like, no, like she indulges him a little bit, but also like I'm not going anywhere.
I mean, she kind of seems like she's considering, which is again is another, like, to me it's holistically written. Like, it's like people have affairs and they know what the score is. They know this can't be anything more than what it is. Like, and she kind of says that, like,
yeah.
But then she also is kind of like, I'll sleep on it. And you're like, you're giving this poor guy hope.
Yeah, now she's, well, one, I think it's. I
mean, but it's not, because, like, the way the story is written.
Some of it is probably like, all right.
She's like, not like her husband.
And also some of it is probably like, he's infatuated with me, but it'll blow over. Like, I'll sleep on it. Like, in the morning, you're going to be gone anyway, right? Like, you're going to move on. You're a big star or going to be a big star. Like, I'm a nobody that runs a cabin shop in the mountains.
Yeah. And some of it, I guess there is a little more depth to this, because, like, as I'm talking to you about it, like, you're kind of adding things and like, I'm like, yeah, I can see that. But anyways, eventually this movie gets going, and Burgess Meredith finds his agent.
This is great.
This is a really cool scene. He finds it, like, he's in his cabin losing his fucking mind talking to this dummy, like, in a full, like, argument and going back and forth with the dummy. And Burgess Meredith has found him. He's just standing at the door to the cabin, just watching him, smoking a cigar. And he sees him, and says, "How long have you been like this, kid?" Or, I can't do a good impression.
Yeah, it's to that effect. And his very
smooth
voice.
Yeah, it's like scratchy, but also like smooth. Like, "How long you been like this, kid?" You know, like, and. This is actually a really cool scene, like, because he's like straightforward. His agent is very straightforward with him. He's like, "You're clearly sick. I want you to see a doctor. We're gonna get you fixed up." And then, you know, Anthony Hopkins is not having it. And he's like, "All right, how about this? We'll make a little deal here." And the whole time that they're like arguing about this, fucking Corky Anthony Hopkins is like using the fucking dummy to like make smart ass comments and this and that. And I'm watching this with my wife. I sit here, I go, if I'm this agent, the thing I'm gonna say to this guy is shut the fuck up with that dummy shit. We're trying to have an adult conversation, right? Like, yeah. Put him down. I'm trying to talk to you as an adult. Like, we're not, you know, you're not baby. And I'm gonna fucking, and he does. That's exactly what happens. Like, literally right after I said that, he tells him, "Here's what I want you to do. You're gonna put down Fats." That's they call a dummy.
Yeah.
Make him shut up for 5 minutes. And he's like, "And if you could do that, we're good. And if not, we're getting you a doctor." And of course, he doesn't really make it. He goes for a while, and he's
it's great though, because he's like, yeah. "How long now?" Ben, it's been 30 seconds.
Yeah. And yes, like this whole scene is so great. It's like a sparring match between two really great actors, where like one is doing very little, like Burgess Meredith, but like, you know, he gets a lot done with a little. And Hopkins is like, meanwhile, crawling out of his skin on the couch. Yeah.
He's detoxing in like real time.
You can see it. You can see it like physically. Like, Hopkins' performance is next level right here. And yeah, it is really like, how long has it been now? Are we almost done? And he's like, he's trying to keep it together, and he's able to have a conversation, but like, you could tell he's like, it's so hard for him. But he doesn't make it. You know, his agent gets up to go and leave, and he decides he has to kill him. He kills him with the dummy.
This is amazing, too. Like, it's like, how are you going to kill him? And it's like, you use me. And, like, that's all you see. You just see the doll killing him, and it's like the doll flying at Green, like, sideways, hitting him in the head. Like, you know that Corky's swinging the doll around, but it's just... It's shot in such a way that it's hysterical.
I thought, honestly, there's a kill near the end of the film I think is really cool, but I thought that this was like kind of lame. Like, I get what you're saying. Like, that, and it is what happens.
So goofy.
It's just like the idea that you would be able to kill someone with a doll is ridiculous. But they do kind of set it up earlier, because there is a part where, like, I forget, someone comments on how heavy the doll is. And
it's made out of wood, right? It's not a hollow plastic doll. Like, this is a wooden doll.
Yeah.
And also, he doesn't kill him with it. Like, that's the thing.
Well,
like,
he
bludgeons him with it, but he doesn't finish the job.
Yeah. But it's just, to me, it was like a silly visual.
Yes.
But yeah, they did. And you could tell, not just from them saying it, and not just from the fact that it's wooden, that this doll's big. Like, it's a pretty big ventriloquist doll. Anyways. He goes to dump him in the lake, but he's still alive. They struggle in the water. It's an older movie and stuff, but I thought it just felt kind of weak. I don't know.
It's a bit goofy that he, like, so it looks like it's cold out there. I don't know. It's off season for cabins, so I'm going to guess like fall, maybe early winter. And he's like, he strips down to like just his underwear. He's like carrying the body. He's like, like swimming out with them. It's just so goofy that he's like sneaking around outside in his underwear. And he's like getting into this cold lake and then dragging this old man's body out into the middle of the lake. It's just a goofy scene.
It's goofy. The husband comes back.
That night.
They meet. Like, I think it was a breakfast that they decided to have him over.
Peggy goes down to Corky's cabin, like, hey, like, wakes him up, like, made breakfast. Also, hey, my husband's here. And he's watching us.
I mean, your husband, dude? Like, you can come out here and fuck later if you want. Like, you know what I mean? Like, normal people, like, I don't know. Again, there's things about this that I just find weird.
Yeah.
But, like, he does go and he just play it off. Like, he does act like nothing's going on. But the husband does go out later and finds the agent's Rolls Royce, which he finds is weird. Who is this? And he's like, it must be my agent or whatever. And he pretends to call his agent on the phone.
Only Peggy can hear him.
He starts going into about how Peggy should leave her husband.
Yeah.
Anyways, the husband is very, like, suspicious, not just of that whole thing, but he's also suspicious of his wife, and is something going on with Corky. He's kind of like a mean drunk too. He does confront his wife about it, and she says that, like, she lies and says, you know, nothing happened, but I wanted to, you know. He goes to see what Corky will say, and he takes him out on a boat.
I thought this was a pretty good scene too.
Yeah, like, this is pretty good. Like,
we're going fishing, so there's like this big tension on the boat.
You can always do a good scene with two people on a boat where, like, something like, yes, and they do a good job with it.
Duke's fishing, and he catches something, and it's heavy, and fuck, he's dragging in my agent.
Corky thinks he's dragging his agent, and so do I. I'm like, oh yeah, here it goes. Like, he's gonna pull this guy up. Corky's about to, like, whack him in the back of the head, like, and it's just a log. The husband says, oh, you know, Peggy said that you guys fucked or whatever, and Hopkins smartly denies it, because that's not what she said, you know. And then the husband tells the truth. Like, he kind of, like, opens up a little bit here, and he's just like, yeah, I think I'm losing her, man. Like, it's kind of like, this is like a good portrayal of a mean drunk, because he's not like cartoonish. Like, he's just like, he's not clearly not a great guy, but also not like, it's not over the top. But the funny thing is, so, like, he pulls up that log, and you're like, oh, this is all for nothing. And then you see fucking the body of The dude, like, he's like washed up on shore on the side of the lake. The husband thinks that, like, he's still alive. He sends Corky to go call for help. Dude is not alive. So the husband takes, like, this, you know, time with Corky away. Like, he, you know, he's got some free time. He, like, goes into Corky's cabin and he finds the agent's wallet. And he's starting to figure out, oh, something bad has happened here for sure. But that's when the dummy seems to come to life.
Yes.
And stab the husband. Pretty cool. Like, the dummy in this, you know, when Child's Play came out, it was, like, revolutionary. Like, it was really cool special effects. But what little special effects they have here, which is just, like, the things you could normally do with a dummy, they do a good job with, and there's, like, so many creepy shots of the dummy, like, just him looking out a window, and this and that. And here, you have him, like, it seems like he's killing him. Like, they do a lot with a little, and for the time.
Yeah, it's framed well.
Yeah,
in like
yeah
the, exactly. That it's like, oh, it looks like the doll is killing him, which yeah. ultimately, like, it reveals that, you know, Corky is the one controlling the doll.
Yeah,
but like, you don't see that at first.
Yeah, he's behind the curtain. But, like, you know, I know 10-year-old me or whatever watching this thought, oh, the fucking doll finally came alive, you know what I mean? I did not think that here. I was like, what the fuck is going on? And then it's just Corky behind a curtain is operating him. So, yeah, he kills the husband. He gets him wiped out and goes to... He finds Peggy, and he asks her who wins, and she's like, she says it's you, Corky, but she wants to tell Duke. She wants to tell her husband,
which is weird.
It's a bad predicament to be in for Corky, because there's
because he's killed Duke.
Yeah, he's killed Duke.
But so it's weird to me that Peggy would be like, yeah, I want to tell Duke to his face. Like, man, this man almost like as recently as a few hours ago, he hit you and was accusing you of having an affair. Like, yeah. you want to like meet up with him again? Like, is Corky going to protect you from him? Cause I don't think so.
Like, yeah. I suppose like a phone call or something would do. I mean, yeah, I do get the
impulse. A note on the table, man.
Like, yeah. I don't know. I do get the impulse to like end it with this person that you've been with forever. I get that. It does create a cool, like, problem here. you know what I mean? It's like
she's adamant on waiting around.
Yeah, she's like, we're waiting. When he comes back, I'm telling him we're out of here forever. And, like, and Corky knows that ain't gonna happen because dude's never coming back. So how long are we gonna wait? You know?
But like, he's so goofy, too. She's like, oh, yeah, he went off into the woods. Like, he just walked off into the woods? Like, it was almost dark. He knows not to go into the woods at dark. Like, what's going on here, Corky?
It's a great little tension that goes on here for a while. At some point, he pulls out the dummy, and he tells her the trick that we talked about, like, earlier, where he flipped out. He says, like, oh, he sometimes puts, like, a big show about it, but it's just a tricky that he does.
To get laid, yeah.
Like, as a way of getting stewardesses to believe in magic so he can bang them. And I was like, holy shit. They're like, again, it's like he can't control his stupid incel vibes. And this is, like, she gets pissed and, like, she blows up and leaves. Like, basically, he had her and he blew it, you know what I mean? And then we get, like, I think some of my favorite shit is him and the doll, like, alone. Yeah, and the doll starts ordering him around.
Yes.
Really cool, dude. You know, he's like, smile now. He makes him smile. He's like, crawl around on the floor. And he gets down and like, crawls around on the floor. And, you know, this is all just him, like, it, you know, his mental deterioration. But, man, is it cool. And then he's like, get a knife. Go get a knife. He's like, no, what do you want me to do? You want me to kill her? He's like, yeah, you gotta go kill her. It's like me or her type thing, you know? I thought kind of my favorite scene in the movie, and because like Anthony Hopkins is, you know, going apeshit fucking acting here. But yeah, basically the doll, Fats, tells him to, he has to go kill her. And his solution is go leave a wooden heart outside of her door to lure her out. This is something that has been set up earlier in the movie we didn't talk about. Like, he talks about how he carved like a wooden heart for her when they were in high school, but he was too afraid to give it to her.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. So he does that. He's like talking to her on the side of the door, saying he's sorry. And you're like, oh shit, man. He gets this cool shot of him. Like, the camera starts at his feet and fucking goes up. And you see him stand there with a knife. He's like waiting for her around the corner type thing. And she comes out and you're like, oh shit. And then like it cuts to, this is another one where it cuts away to do a cool like twist. Like he comes back to the cabin and he's like, it's, you know, it's done. And you're like, oh shit. Like he fucking actually did that.
Yeah. And like the knife is bloody. And
yeah. Yeah. But it turns out, like, he stabbed himself in the stomach in order to stop him from killing more people. And, specifically, killing her, I guess. And really interesting scene of, like, him dying with Corky. Like, they're, like, wondering who's going to die first. Like, they're, like, holding each other in their arms and... And of course, you know, Corky's not, or Doll's not alive, and he dies. And then you get this, speaking of TV movies, you get this ending where she, like, walks, she's like, oh, you know what, I've changed my mind, and she's, like, walking up to the cabin, and she's like, hey, Corky, come on, let's go, and she's, like, tossing the wooden heart up in the air along as she walks along, and if like, and, like, she tosses it up again, or actually she does a little impression of the doll.
Oh, the right? Doll, yeah. Yeah.
But as she's doing that, she like tosses the wooden heart up again, and it freeze frames on the wooden heart like the end of a TV movie, like so, like
super cheesy.
You know how I am about final shots. Like, I love when it's an awesome final shot. This is just such a fucking lame TV movie final shot. And that's Magic from 1978. A movie that I think is pretty highly regarded in some ways, even though it's like it's not like super well known, but it is kind of like the birth of the creepy doll movie for the modern era. Chris?
See, here's the thing. Like, I think that Anthony Hopkins' performance is great. Like, I think he is...
It's really good, yeah.
Completely apeshit in this film. Like, he is off his rocker. Wonderfully acted. I think Burgess Meredith, very well done with his character. I don't know. I just... You know, kind of like as you said, like there's not a lot to it. I think there's some stuff in, you know, in the relationships and the handling of that and the handling of Corky and his mental deterioration. But it's a very simple story.
It's a B movie dressed up. It's crazy guy with a doll.
With a great performance.
Yeah.
By Hopkins, and that's really what holds it together.
Yeah.
But yeah, I appreciate the performances in it. I think they're really well done. But it's like this is fine. But I don't know, for a movie named Magic, I wish there was maybe a little more magic in it.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna give it a 5.
Okay. Yeah. Again, it's a quality film. It's like well made.
Yeah.
Hopkins' performance is really great, and it's one of those movies. Like, I think we said this about Pins. Like, if you're a fan of the genre, it's like one of those things you should check out. This even more so than Pin because it's kind of like more significant. Like it is. It's just a bigger. It has a bigger footprint on the landscape of movies, right? Like this was kind of a bigger. This was definitely a bigger movie than like. If you say Magic from 1978 from somebody that was around, then they probably know what you're talking about.
Yeah, nobody Pin, knows what Pin is.
Yeah. So there's that. I don't know. It's a decent movie. Like, again, I'm saying it's worth checking out. I'm not giving it a negative review, but to me, you know, yeah, there's some decent suspense. You have Hopkins giving a fucking career performance. Like, honestly, I think this is cooler than Lecter. I really do think like his performance here is like pretty amazing.
He has to play both, like similar to Leon and Pin. Like he is playing both roles here. Like,
yeah,
and well, it's even more animated than Leon and Pin.
You know, Lecter is like a. He's like chewing scenery, and here it's like someone that's crawling out of their skin. Like they're like sweating, yeah. They're like fucking eyes darting around, and like I don't know. I just found this more interesting. The dummy is, I think, really cool looking. But yeah, I just never like. This thing has like two fatal flaws that keep it from being like a classic for me. And that's like I just didn't buy this affair. Like I didn't believe it.
That's fair.
And I think like when you compare it to Pin, like you know which we are in a way, like I don't think we get a good sense of what makes him tick. Like what made him the way he is.
Right, there's no exploration. Yeah. He just it's
this guy's crazy. That's why I call it a B movie because it's like it's just a crazy guy with a doll. You know what I mean? Like
He's unhinged and there's no real reason for why he just is.
It's just which is fine. It's totally fine. But when you compare it next to Pin like. Had real psychological underpinnings for like why he became that way. Like it really did. Like he had all these like markers, like things that happened to him. Like again, I'm not saying one way is better than the other or whatever, but like I don't know. It just made this feel slightly hollow in comparison because of that. For me, Magic is like a 6 out of 10. If you're a horror fan, it's like something you should see once in your life. This is your first time seeing it, right, Chris?
Yeah, it's my first time.
And you're happy to have seen it, even though it's...
Yeah, I mean, okay. I think the performance itself was worth watching.
Yeah. So, it sounds like we're both in agreement that we're going with Pin?
Yeah.
All right, well, I did do a poll. I didn't do it on Twitter because I didn't think anyone would be able to
respond. We soon won't be able to do polls on Twitter.
So. Yeah, so that will be exclusively. If you're listening to this, you probably could be in this group on Facebook, but I will put them in the Joe Bob Briggs Mutant Collective on Facebook, which is pretty big, and they give way more responses to polls than I get on Twitter. And I did get a decent. I was very surprised by the amount of responses I got on this poll, and it went 60% in favor of Magic. So I do think that is because a lot of people have not seen Pin. But I think it probably would have been a 50-50 split if more people had seen Pin. Like I think there's some people that go Magic's obviously a better made film and blah blah blah, right? I think it is like a better made film, but I just think that it just for my personal taste, I enjoyed Pin more, and I thought I enjoyed the weirdness, like the Durst fucking the doll, like the weird shit like that.
So you know? Fucking weird, man. Yeah. Still super weird.
So, anyways, Pin wins, beats Magic, fucking big uppercut. Punching above its weight. That is our first creepy doll episode. I don't think it'll be our last. Chris, and there's one thing, last thing I wanted to mention.
Mm-hmm.
Did you happen to watch Primal Scream?
I did not catch Primal Scream yet. I know you said that's a good companion piece for these.
For these, yeah, absolutely. So what it is it's a short film by Rodney Asher, who is the director of Glitch in the Matrix, The Nightmare, mm-hmm. Room 237. And it's very much in the style of his films that he's done. And what it is it's basically people talking about how when they were kids, they saw the TV spot for Magic, and it scared the shit out of them and made them scared of dolls for the rest of their life. And it's like 25 minutes long, and he uses that as a jumping off point to talk about the fear of dolls, like why people are afraid of dolls. And like, you know, like he does, like he'll like push it a little bit further and like, you know, it's like people are hiding behind a mask, which is kind of what you do on the internet. Like people on the internet are like, they're basically just hiding behind a mask. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and that allows you to be meaner to people. And like, and it's just really well edited and really with really cool music and this and that. And it's just, I thought really, you know, it breezes by. You're in and out in 20 minutes. Like you're, you know, and it's very creepy. Like the guy is very good at making a documentary that like gets under your skin, that creeps you out. And so I highly recommend Primal Scream.
On Shudder?
Yeah, it's on Shudder. Yeah. I actually spoke to the director last night. I asked Rodney Asher because I've seen this thing a few times now, and when I noticed at the beginning of this time, it seemed like the intro to like a series, like it was going to be like a series where like the next episode he would talk to someone else about like basically like a movie or a movie trailer that scared them when they were a kid and caused some fear, just the way like the intro, it plays like the intro to a TV series. So I asked him, I go, was this like meant to be like a series that did not get picked up by Shudder? And I guess I should probably like quote him directly, since I'm quoting like an actual filmmaker here. Hold on, let me pull it up. Yeah, he said, this is what I said: was Primal Scream supposed to be a series that didn't get picked up? I love that it's a short film, but the intro makes it seem like it was intended as a series. I want more. And he replied, he said, thanks, man, and you're right. Although I was glad we got to do the pilot, we had hoped to do more and even recorded audio for a few others. Since you asked, here's a short, rough cut, audio only, with Clay McLeod. And it was an episode he was going to do about Stuff. Which, have you ever seen The Stuff, Chris?
No.
Okay. Stuff is pretty cool. We might do that one time. Anyways, it was really cool to get a response from him. Yeah, it was supposed to be a series. I don't know why Shudder passed on it. I'm guessing he would not have been asking for a lot to make it, but the way his films are edited, I would imagine would have taken time, and maybe they didn't want that. I don't know. Or rights to clips, because he uses a lot of clips from movies. I don't know. I don't know
what to deal with. You have to get licensing for all that.
I wonder, because like, if you watch this, watch Primal Scream, like you will enjoy it. You will like it. It's like probably uses clips from 50 to 100 different media, like things in 20 minutes. So yeah, that might have been part of the problem.
Yeah, that could be it.
Anyways, for anyone who has watched these movies or is into creepy doll shit, check out Primal Scream on Shudder. Unfortunately, like it was apparently going to be a series with about all sorts of different subjects, but we got the one episode about creepy dolls. And that's it for this month. Chris, what are we watching next month?
Next month, we're going to watch a pair of Italian horror films.
Italian? All right.
I Giallo, how do I actually pronounce that? That genre of film. But we're going to watch 1973's
Giallo.
Giallo, yeah.
Giallo, okay. We got two Giallo movies. All right.
1973's Torso.
Okay.
And 1982's The New York Ripper, which many people consider to be Lucio Fulci's last great horror film.
What is that called?
The New York Ripper.
New York Ripper.
Both of these are available on Shudder. Not on Shudder. Both of these are available on Tubi. So they're out there for free. Yeah, so Torso, 1973, and The New York Ripper from 1982.
Trying to beef up your Italian horror knowledge there?
I don't even know how I ended up on this. I was looking for stuff and was like, this isn't where I started out at, but went down a rabbit hole and was like, all right, like we could do this. Almost went with some Argento stuff, but it's like these are, I mean, Fulci is a pretty big name in the genre.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah.
And trying to tie these together, these are both about, I mean, this type of film is always, you know, kind of like slasher type stuff, but
vibes and violence.
Yeah. So I mean, but both Torso and The New York Ripper are about like serial killers hunting women. So
are they specific? Like, all right. So I think we've gone over this before. Like, there's Italian horror. And then in that is Giallo, which is like the murder mystery. Like, these are both like the murder mystery.
Yes,
because you have your Italian horror like zombie, where it's just like it's gore.
Exactly, and Fulci is zombie as well. This is more on that side of the murder mystery stuff. They're both classified as the Giallo stuff, so
they'll have the gore too, I'm assuming. Yeah, I'm no expert. So we've reached the end of my expertise on the genre. I've only seen a few things.
Yeah, I've seen some Argento stuff. I've seen some Fulci stuff, but
I always more appreciate these movies more than I love them. But mm-hmm. It's like coffee. Acquired taste, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I they grow on me each time, like, because I appreciate the style these Italian movies have, and Fulci, I appreciate the fucking like balls to the wall gore
that'll do. Yeah, something. So I assume that one will be quite gory, The New York Ripper, because that's a Fulci film. Torso, a decade earlier, in fact. It's considered by a lot of people to be the first slasher film. Like, I know that gets thrown around a bunch.
Oh, yeah. I've heard of it. I know exactly. I've absolutely heard of this. Yep.
I think these will be two fun kind of...
For sure, man.
Gory slasher mystery type films.
All right, we'll be back next month with some Italian horror, man. Cool. Thanks for listening. See you next month.